see how it goes. Essentially, for those of you who were there in the first meeting that we had with the Bali, so we mentioned that we have kind of a tight time frame because we'd like to essentially cover as much as we can of Sidur of the past during the time that we have. Right on the outset, you should know that Zoreya is a much bigger malacha than a lot of the others, and there's a lot of overlapping topics. You don't try to calculate based on how long it takes us to do Zoreya whether the others will fit in. We did mention that Bishul, we're not likely to cover much of what there is to say about Bishul. Bishul was something you could spend the whole year's limbud on. Since we said maybe the first 10 malachas, not that we won't talk about Bishul at all, but in terms of Bishul being the 11th malach of the Sidur HaPas, unlikely that we'll really scratch much of the surface of Bishul. But we'll try to do as much else as we can. And so in the context of this meeting, we mentioned that we don't want to spend a lot of time on introductions. There's a lot that one could say, could talk about Hilchos Shabbos for a very long time without talking about any specific malachas. There's so many general concepts to talk about that that could take up months, so we don't have months, so we don't want to do that. We do have minutes, so we'd like to spend a few minutes today making a few introductory observations about some general principles, especially because they will immediately become relevant as we start talking about specific malachas. And then within the context of specific malachas, there are many, many interlocking ideas and concepts, how malachas define each other, how they relate to each other, and how general principles are reflected within various malachas. So just to start from the beginning, as Rav Shechter would say, first God created the world. Created the world in 7 days. Seventh day was Shabbos. Fine. Okay, so we observe Shabbos. But in terms of that, so there are a number of points to keep in mind. We don't know that much about Shabbos from the Torah. The Torah doesn't spell out very much at all. The Torah just tells us not to do malacha and then essentially leaves us on our own. And as the Gemara Maseches Chagiga says, that Hilchos Shabbos are a little bit in print and much more hanging on top of that, you know, like mountains hanging on threads, that we don't have the Torah spelling out in detail what exactly we're talking about. And even the concept of Malachas Machshaves, which is such a dominant theme in Hilchos Shabbos, is really derived from the Mishkan. So the Mishkan Malacha that was done is defined as Malachas Machshaves, and we understand that to be a key defining term when we talk about Hilchos Shabbos because of the Mishkan relationship. So much of what's crucial to understanding what's going on is not at all spelled out in the Torah. And the Gemara earlier in Shabbos in Daf Mem Tes tells us that the malachos are derived, again, from the Mishkan, but the number of malachos, which is what our Mishnah picks up from, is figured out based on counting the usage of the word malacha. At least one opinion of the Gemara, using the counting how many times various forms of the word malacha appear in the Torah, so we somehow are clued into the fact that there are 39 malachos for us to figure out. And that being the case, we look to the Mishkan, but it's a discussion how exactly we look to the Mishkan. And that actually is very relevant to us because the whole question of Sidur of the Pas. So what exactly is Sidur the Pas? And who cares about Pas? What does Pas have to do with the Mishkan? And is that even an appropriate term? Is that relevant at all to the relationship between the Mishkan and Shabbos? And it might not be. The truth is, we use Sidur the Pas, even though Rashi would not agree that there really is such a thing as the Pas in terms of being relevant, because there is a debate as to what is the nature of learning things from the Mishkan. Roughly, you could call it a machlokas, Rashi and Rav Haigo, and it's probably much more involved than that. And it is the topic of the psicha to the Eglei Tal. If you have an Eglei Tal, it's kedai to have. It's a fascinating way that the Eglei Tal is written by the Avnei Nezer, the Sochet Shavu Rebbe, not the relatively recent, extremely lumdish and creative Achron, and yet his involvement in Hilchos Shabbos has become so profound and so deep on an analytical level that he's essentially treated as a Rishon, even by Talmidei Chachamim, who mostly focus on Rishonim. The Eglei Tal has kind of slipped in there as essentially a very, very essential source. So it's kedai to be aware of, to have access to Eglei Tal. I have one over here It's a fancy new edition where they combine the Tshuvas Avnei Nezer with what's in the Eglat Tal. The Eglat Tal itself is essentially about Sidur Depas. It throws in Gozeis also, but he has many Tshuvas about all the other Malachas that he printed in this Tshuvas, so this the fancy volume to put all of them together. But there is essentially a Machlokas in the Rishonim, which could be some of the Rishonim understood was a Machlokas between the Bavli and the Rishonim. And this again is something that Eglat Tal takes up in his introduction. What does it mean when we say we learn from the Mishkan? Does it mean we learn from the construction of the Mishkan exclusively? Or does it mean that we will also learn from that which was done in the Mishkan, after the Mishkan was already built, i.e. the Avodas HaKarbanos? So that which is necessary as part of the Seder of the Avoda is also a source for deriving principles of Malachas, which would open up many other possibilities. So it's interesting to try to figure out what exactly is the Yisod of that Machlokas. Rabbi Yonis and Sachs, Rabbi Yeshiva, has a sefer called Chemdas Yamin where he talks about this Machlokas at length. He and many others note various nafkaminas lahalacha that come out from this Machlokas. In terms of not each occasional Malachas, you'll find that there might be a difference whether you assume that it can only be derived from something that was part of the construction, or whether you assume that it was also relevant to things that were happening in the Mishkan, which would also then also include things happening in the Beis HaMikdash, also a key difference. If it's the construction of the Mishkan, it's only the Mishkan. If it's the Karbanos, it's the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. So there are some nafkaminas. It's not really so relevant for the most part, but it's interesting, a conceptual question, what exactly is going on? Why would you assume one or the other? It may have something to do with the idea that the construction of the Mishkan is not the Ocha Shabbos, that the Gemara understands from Sukkim. So therefore, maybe that therefore becomes the model for, since building the Mishkan is what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, so writ large, so therefore all the specifics of the Mishkan are the details of what you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Conversely, if you believe that it applies to even what was done in the Mishkan, so then it's a little bit of a different type of a limud, and it's probably what to say about that, something that's worth thinking about. But that affects the question of these first 11 malachas. What are they there for? So if we assume that it was inclusive of that which happens in the Mishkan, so that's the view of Rav Haigon, so then that's where you get pas from. Because why do I need bread to build a Mishkan? Besides making sure my workers are happy, but why do I need bread in terms of the actual construction? Presumably I don't. But in terms of what happens in the Mishkan, so the Lechem HaPanim, so that's how Rav Haigon understood that these are all 11 steps towards bringing about the Lechem HaPanim, and that's where this whole phrase, Sidur Depas, comes from. According to Rashi, as Rashi explains in his commentary here and earlier, that this is for something else, that this was about making the dyes that were used. This is Rashi here in Dibar Maskel HaOfer, right, where Rashi says, Lo hava b'mishkan, right, that this was not something relevant to the Mishkan, right, directly contradicting the idea that the Sidurei HaPas is relevant to the Mishkan. The lo shayach el b'pas, the pas lo shayach b'malachas ha-mishkan. Right, this whole famous Sidur d'pas, according to Rashi, no such thing as pas in the Mishkan. Rather, the Mishkan is interested in making dyes, because there was a lot of coloring going on. And so therefore, making dyes was a process of planting items, vegetation, then extracting that vegetation, cooking it, etc., so that we would be able to construct these elements of the Mishkan. So there is a fundamental difference between Rashi and Rav Haigon, why these malachas that we're focusing on this summer are even relevant to Shabbos, relevant to the Mishkan, in terms of our language, in terms of what we use to refer to it. Sort of Haigon's view seems to dominate, just that we call it Sidur d'Pas, assuming that Pas has something to do with the Mishkan, which Rashi here directly contradicts.
But why can't Sidur d'Pas refer to the malachas that are learned out, as opposed to what happened in the Mishkan?
Why can't it refer to what?
To the malachas that are learned out from the construction of the Mishkan.
Once we say the malachas that are derived from the construction, then it happens to be they all add up to Pas.
Yeah.
But why should they add up to Pas? You know, why shouldn't they add up to Samonim? You know, why shouldn't they add up to Why should we call it that? There's no real nafkamina. There are small nafkamina. I don't want to say there's no nafkamina. You know, occasionally, Shuvas Yad Sofer has a discussion about this. And again, if you look in Rabbi Sachs, if you can find nafkamina, they're not earth-shattering nafkaminas, but you know, occasionally there is a nafkamina and a specific malacha, whether it's based on Mishkan construction or what they did. But for the most part, it doesn't really affect things whether we call it Siddur Depasa, Siddur Desamamanim.
The phrase Siddur Depas comes from Rav Haigon.
I don't know exactly where it started, but it's reflecting his shita, because according to Rashi, here you see these words again, pas,
right.
Nothing to do with Mishkan.
Right. So he says pas, but not sidur with the pas.
Right. Right. Maybe he says that if it means ofa, why does the Mishnah talk about ofa?
Right.
When ofa is about pas, speaking of pas, that's going to do what we're talking about.
So, but wouldn't some amount of be bishul?
Oh, so that's Rashi's point. Right. So Rashi says that despite the fact that pas is not the right word, so nonetheless, the Mishnah talks about it, and that's what he gets into. That's actually his entree into the issue, that pas doesn't seem to be the right word. Ofer doesn't seem to be the right word. We should be talking about bishul. That's why he's bringing it up.
But the fact that it's using ofer would seem to be more of a proof for a haikra.
Perhaps, right. And that's why Rashi is on the defensive over here.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Rashi 9 Dalet does mention Siddur de pas.
So what exactly that, how that exactly plays, and that's something
he
we'll
hopefully...
He may have been quoting
a
haikra or something.
Maybe.
Rashi says Gemara asked that question.
Right, so we'll get to how that plays in, but he's on defensive because it seems to not be consistent with his overall view. So there is a general point of Shabbos, which is a fascinating issue, which I think it's worth being aware of. Again, the Gather introduction, but it's going to play a role in a lot of our discussions. There are a number of general observations if you want to really be a Madaik, and the Mishnah that I assume everybody today got to see, at least the Mishnah, whether or not you kvetch that, what every single malacha means, especially when it comes to Ariga, it's especially complicated. But there are certain diukim that one can make in the Mishnah which are relevant to broader concepts in Halacha Shabbos, and lamdisha concepts, theoretical concepts, practical concepts, and it's worth just calling your attention to a few of them. So essentially, our Mishnah is very basic, right? All it says is there's 39 malachas, and here's what they are. List them in as sparse a way as possible. But nonetheless, within that, there are certain general observations one can make. Not every point would necessarily keep you up at night, but it's interesting that they've been picked up on. For example, this is a topic of a lengthy discussion, if you feel that this is an appropriate way to get into it. The Mishnah phrases the Malachos as... essentially as verbs, as people doing something. Ha-zoreya, ha-choresh, called nouns, except people doing actions, whatever you want to call that, verbs or nouns, but somebody, basically people doing things. Ha-zoreya, ha-choresh, etc. The Rambam has a different formulation. The Rambam lists just the actions themselves, zriya, charisha, etc. And you may not consider that significant, but the Magid Mishnah thought it was worth asking, you know, why is it that the Mishnah has it one way and the Rambam has it a different way? Is there any significance to the change in the format? So there are theories as to what the difference is, if there is a difference, and it's relevant. One of the introductory topics to Shabbos that we won't get into, but it's certainly a major theme in Hilchos Shabbos, is we know there's a concept of malacha she'netzricha legufa, that we generally assume that if a person does a malacha without the normal purpose, what's the normal purpose? Most Rishonim understand, meaning the purpose that matches the Mishkan. Tosfos and others have a slightly different understanding. For now, we'll keep it simple. Let's say you do an action that, in terms of its details, is a malacha, but your intent is different than that which was done in the Mishkan. So let's say we call that a malacha shenitzricha legufa. So la halacha, we assume that that's pater. Nisda d'rabanan, or something like that. It's not nisda d'araisa. The Rambam happens to be an exception to this rule. There is an opinion in the Gemara which the Rambam adopts against accepted halacha, that malacha shenitzricha legufa is chayiv. So some thought that was relevant to his change in language. There is a sefer called Magen Avos. Magen Avos is a classical sefer by Mordechai Benet, who lived in the 1800s, older contemporary of the Chasam Sofer, which I'll go a little bit later. So he suggests that the Rambam changed the language because he thinks that it doesn't matter whether you have the right intent or not. So the Mishnah is assuming, like the view of Malacha Shenitzricha Legufa is Pater. So we're not just interested in Zriya, we're interested in your wanting to be Zareya. Not just the action by itself, but your intent to be doing an action of Zriya is crucial. Well, since the Rambam believes and a malacha shenet zriyah legufa is still chayiv. So therefore, it's the action of zriya that gets our attention more than it is your intent to be zareya. That's why he switched the language.
So how do the Rambam understand malachas machshavas?
So malachas machshavas has many different implications. We'll maybe have a chance to talk about it. It's not simply addressing malachas shenet zriyah legufa. So both of those, there's two separate sugyas, which if we had time, we'd go into a little bit more detail. Maybe we will have time to get it a little bit piecemeal, but they're not the same thing. They could be related, but they're not identical for sure. You can have a lot to say about Malachas Machshevis without ever getting onto the subject of Malachas Shrin Yitzchuk Leguf. So in any event, there is a different suggestion as well, which touches upon a major discussion the Achronim have, and it'll be relevant to a lot of Malachas we talk about. Rav Yosef Engel, familiar with that name, a classic Achron from about 100 years ago, Gaon of Krakow. One of his svarim, the Asvin Daraisa, which, remember when I left Karen Biavna, my Rabbi Rav Lachman recommended you should read the Asvin Daraisa from beginning to end. It's definitely a worthwhile pursuit. So in the Asvin Daraisa, he suggests that there is the Yesod here, not focusing on the Rambam, but focusing on the Mishnah specifically. Why does the Mishnah say Hazareya? Because when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, when it comes to the concept of Shabbos, what is it that the Torah is prohibiting? Which you could roughly, if you want to speak in classic Lamdisha terms, and we'll discuss in a few minutes whether this is appropriate, is Hilchos Shabbos, the Isser Melacha on Shabbos, is it, let's call it an Isser Gavra or an Isser Chavtza? That does the Torah want that Jews should be abstaining from Melacha on Shabbos? Or does the Torah want that malachos shouldn't be happening on Shabbos? The second side is already a little bit difficult, especially because we know that there's no desire, and in fact there's the opposite when it comes to non-Jews. We have no desire to stop malacha from happening when it's being done by non-Jews, we say quite the opposite. So it's conceptually already a little bit difficult to say that we are against malachos taking place on Shabbos. So in keeping with that, Rav Yosef Engel and a number of other Achronim agreed with him independently that when it comes to Shabbos, the idea is the individual should be at rest. The Jewish individual should be at rest. We are not interested in whether or not malachos are happening. We're interested that you should not be doing malachos. So therefore the Mishnah emphasizes that by saying Hazareya, Hachorei, Shakotzer, etc., etc., saying that that's what we're concerned about, that you should not be doing malachos. Not that malacha shouldn't be happening. So, for example, the Chassam Sofer has a yesod that others agreed to as well, that really, conceptually, there's no such thing as shlichus when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. And that's why Amir al-Akam, we'll talk about this more in a minute, Amir al-Akam, we assume
shlichus
is... shlichus at all, really. That the idea that if you ask somebody to do a malacha for you, so let's say you ask a non-Jew, so we assume that's a prohibition to Rabbanan. We'll talk about that more in a minute. So the reason that's a prohibition to Rabbanan and not Daraisa, there could be a number of reasons why it's not a prohibition to Daraisa, but one of the main reasons is, because according to those who maintain this position, is that if you have somebody else do malacha for you, you are still at rest. And therefore, you're not being Mechal Shabbos by causing a malacha to happen through somebody else's effort. And there are those who argue with that, we'll talk about in a second. But some suggest, Rav Nosson Gestetner, Zichron of Rach, has a tshuva about this also. The big Talmud Chacham from Bnei Brak passed away just a few months ago. Where he and others suggest similarly that, so for example, if you have a refuah on Shabbos, if you have a situation where Shabbos is permitted for Kuach Nefesh, so then there's a whole discussion whether it's Hutra or Dchuya, you know, is that just Mutter, or is it only kind of Mutter because we're forced to? So some assume it's essentially completely Mutter, he says, because the whole idea is not that we care so much that a Malacha shouldn't be happening. It's that we don't want you to be doing Malacha. Once we're allowing you to do the Malacha because it's B'Sarech B'Kuach Nefesh, so then the fact that the Malacha is happening is not of any concern to us. So a lot of Achronim followed this position. A lot of Achronim seem to have this idea that Malachos Shabbos are about that concept, that it's really about the fact that the individual should be at rest, and it's not so much about our concern that Malachos shouldn't be happening. We're not looking to create an environment of no Malacha. It's interesting that one prominent Mechaber of the 20th century took a different view. Another Sefer that is it's worth reading from beginning to end is the works of Rav Zevin. He's a fascinating thinker in general. So Rav Zevin, you may know from books of Hasidic stories or from other works, but you know he wrote everything from that to the Encyclopedia Talmudis and everything in between. So one of the svarim he has, a classic work, is called L'Or HaHalacha. And in L'Or HaHalacha, he has an essay about Shabbos. And in that essay, so he essentially takes the other side. He thinks that there is a concern that we're trying to create an atmosphere of Shvisa Mimalacha, and that it's not simply about the individual being at rest. And it's interesting, it's a complexity that applies to Kol HaTorah Kula. Whenever you try to extract what the theme of something is, how Yisurim the Rabbanan affect the equation is always complicated, because you could take it to prove whichever point you want. You could say, oh, clearly, if the Rabbanan works with your theory, so then, oh, you see, I'm right, that's why Chazal made this Nisa the Rabbanan. And if the Rabbanan doesn't work with your theory, so you say, you see, that's why it's only Nisa the Rabbanan, because when I told it's okay, and that's why Chazal had to come and, for whatever reason, answer it. So, essentially, it fits whatever, the Rabbanans tend to fit whatever theory you want. So, here the Amir al-Akum case is one such case. There are those who will say that Amir al-Akum is Mutter min HaTorah, probably. Mutter min HaTorah because there is no issue of Shlichus when it comes to Shabbos, because it's only about the individual. While others will maintain that no, that then the Shulchan Aruch Rav sounds like this, this is something that Rav Zevin talks about, that the fact that Chazal prohibited having a non-Jew do malacha for you reflects the fact that we're not just concerned about the individual, but we don't want you bringing about malachos even if you happen to be at rest at the time. And that whether that means that that's what Chazal were getting at, or that on some level there is even a deraisa involved in Amir al-Akum, the different nuances, but reflects this ability of a Tindra Banan to kind of prove whatever point you want it to. Another example of that, which Rav Zevin also talks about, is the prohibition of Maisa Shabbos. That, you know, we know that something that is a product of a malacha is generally usur bahana under certain circumstances, regulations as to how and when and for who. But if I cook something on Shabbos, let's put in a minimalist sense, if I cook something on Shabbos, I can't eat that certainly on Shabbos. So what does that say? So that seems to say there is something about the result, not just about the action. So the thing is, that's also an Issa D'Rabbanan. So once again, it becomes marshaled for both sides, especially because in this case, the Gemara in Maseches Chulin, I think it's Daf Kuf Tes Vav, the Gemara there explicitly derives a pasuk to say that Maisa Shabbos is Mutter, Min HaTorah. It says, Hu Kodesh V'ein Maaseh Kodesh. So Gemara not only, it's not only that Chazal made an Issa here, but the Gemara explicitly says it's Mutter. So there are those who would read that Gemara as saying that's a raya, that again we're focused only on the individual being at rest, and while others would say again, so why did Chazal come in and make this gzeirah d'rabbanan? Happens to be that Dvar Yehoshua, the set of tshuvas written by Yehoshua Ehrenberg, was a dayan in Tel Aviv. It's a fascinating tshuvas in general. It's a tremendous baki and charif. So he thought that essentially Chazal added a new layer to Shabbos with that gzeirah, that min haTorah, Shabbos is about the individual, that min haTorah, the Torah is interested in your being at rest on Shabbos, and Chazal added a layer of an Isra Cheftza, so to speak, added this whole new element, that of an environment of rest, which is reflected by this Isra of Maisa Shabbos. Rav Zevin has a fascinating piece of Lundus in the end of that piece. Just a very relevant issue, especially in the summer. There's a machlokas rishonim, the Rashba and the Ran. But the Rashba, I think most of Achronim Paskin like, well, it's a little bit of an open question. We know there's an Isser of Amir al-Akum. Right, so I'm not allowed to have a non-Jew do malacha for me. But what about if I want to ask a Jew to do malacha for me? Because let's say it's the summertime and I brought in Shabbos at 7 and he's bringing in Shabbos at 8:30. So, you know, this, it happened in Shul, you have the early and late minions, so the guy who's going out and the other people are coming in. So can the guy going out ask the guy who's coming in to do malacha for him? So that was the machlokas rishonim, and the Rashba was of the view that he could do this. So some asked the question then, so how could he do such a thing if there is if there is a concern that you shouldn't have malacha happening? And the fact that the Rashba allows this seems to be a raya that it's about your being at rest. Because here's Kamir Yisrael. why should you be allowed to tell a Jew to malacha, do malacha for you if it's anything more than the requirement that you be at rest?
Would Avshe Demilsa be somewhat of a proof for the Chepta argument?
Maybe, except that it's probably Mr. Rabbanan also. So it's a little bit of a complex point. It's not clear what the nature of that issue is. But Rav Zevin explains that point very nicely. He says, yeah, when I say there's an issue of the Chefetz on Shabbos, I mean on Shabbos itself, but Tosefes Shabbos, when you bring in Shabbos early, so Mamela, that's personal. You know, that on Shabbos itself, it's one thing, but when you bring in Shabbos an hour before Shabbos, so for sure that's a din of the Gavra. So then, okay, so then it's only about your being at rest. So the fact that some Rishonim and maybe Halacha allow you to ask somebody else to do something, that doesn't have to bother me. But on Shabbos itself, then there is a reality of Shabbos in the world, and that's a different story. So that's a whole discussion which, in theory, one could suggest is a diuk in the Mishnah itself, so we haven't strayed from the text so far in talking about it, and we'll see it's going to play a role in very early on in our discussion of some of the Malachas that that come up.
But that Dichu is also taking a side on Tosefes Shabbos.
Correct. Right, but he's saying, so but then you'd have to say probably that everyone would agree about that, about Tosefes Shabbos, because even if you want to say that Tosefes Shabbos is a separate discussion, that it's actually Shabbos, but still it's a personal actual Shabbos, if I would have to say, because you have control over it, so it's hard to say that there's a reality of Shabbos in the world. It's a separate discussion over it. So another diuk that's also going to be relevant very early on, from the Mishnah, it's also just interesting in terms of the history of thought, the intellectual history of how Rishonim and Achronim and what they care about. So, again, our Mishnah is very sparse, right? Just listing malachas. So there's all kinds of details to the malachas. Mishnah doesn't talk about it. The Gemara will talk about it, the Gemara won't talk about it, but the Mishnah is not taking it upon itself to lay down all the rules of Hilchos Shabbos. But there are some details here which are more than just a name. Right, so we're going to discuss one of the major issues in Zriya and Charisha is the question of a shear. Most of the malachos have a relevant shear. Right, we talk about carrying on Shabbos, how much are you carrying? We talk about cooking, how much are you cooking? We talk about all these different actions. Usually there is some quantity that's going to be relevant in terms of making you chayef, and less than that you're going to be pater. So most of the Mishnah doesn't talk about it. Why does the Mishnah have to list all the details here? But Tosfos points out that there are some details that are here. Ha'oreg shnei chutin. So you weave two threads. Ha'oseh shtei batei nirin. I mentioned before this has more relevance than you might think. Ha'koseh shnei osios. So Tosfos raises the question and doesn't answer it. Tzarech lefarish lama pirish kan uva oreg uva batzeo batofer uva kosev shir tfemi b'shar. We need to figure out why is it that all the others, they don't tell us about the shir. And for a handful of malachas, the Mishnah tells us what this year is. So it's just interesting, again, in terms of the history of Lamdish literature. As far as I know, Tosfos asked this question, let's assume sometime around the year 1100, 1200. Nobody cared about this question for 500 years. Right? Nobody talked about this. All of a sudden, 500 years later, something happened in the world and everyone got interested in this question. So it's most famously addressed by the Magen Avos, who mentioned before, of Mordechai Benet, who lived in the 1700s, a good 500-600 years after this Tosfos was asked and doesn't answer. And after him, there's a lot of literature about it. There's a lot of discussion, but I'm not aware of anything between 1100 and 1700. The most common approach, which the Magen Avos and others have, there's some room to quibble with it, but the approach that he has is that there's a difference between the shiurim that the other malachos have and these shiurim. And what he suggests, feel free to take a stab at it, but essentially what he suggests is that when it comes to the other malachos, a shiur is a shiur in chashivas, that the malacha stands on its own. It's just that it has to be significant in order for you to be chayiv. In order for it to be a malacha that we're going to take note of, that you're going to get punished for, it has to be a certain amount. So like, for example, to use an example from a different area of halacha, so you're not allowed to eat chazer, and you're chayiv malchus if you eat a kezayis of chazer. So what does that mean? It means that the isser of eating chazer is the same no matter how much you're having, but it's not significant until you have a kezayis. It becomes noteworthy at that point. So that's, in general, what's relevant here. But when it comes to these malachos, that the Mishnah identifies the shir, so then it's not just a question of chashivas. Then it's a question of defining the malacha. That less than that is not called a malacha at all. And that's an interesting concept. And it's a topic of a lot of literature that's basically, again, from the 1700s on, there are many who take up this topic. And there's two different versions of why you would say that. Why would you say it's not a malacha at all if it's less than what's discussed in the Mishnah? So either you could say because it's not going to last. You know, we talk about weaving less than one thread. I don't even know what the words mean, to tell you the truth. What does it mean to weave one thread? So it's not going to last. That's one way that, for example, Rav Elazar Moshe Hurwitz has that goes in the back of the Gemara. That's the way he says it. I think the Karen Ora says it like that also. Everyone comes to the party after the question was first brought up. I say a story once that the author of the Shulchan Aruch was, Mechaber, was once distressed because he spent all night or longer than that trying to think of a certain svara, and then it finally came to him. And then he was walking in the street, and he heard some Pashto Jews speaking, and they said the same svara that it was such a struggle for him to come up with. And so his chavrusa, the malach, told him that, no, you brought it into the world with your yugi and amala, and once it's there, now everybody can access it.
Like opening jar filled fish.
Right, so now it's accessible.
The guy
so.
That opens it.
Right, so it's a panel, so everyone gets involved once the 1700s came. And so one version is that it's not going to last. It's not significant at all. Not just not important, but not significant at all. Others say, no, this is the gedder of the malacha. The malacha, let's say, ariga, is about combining two strings. And if you're not combining two strings, so then it's not considered to be significant at all. There's a funny example that's given, I think, in the Levush Mordechai, which says that it's like saying, since the Torah prohibits marrying two sisters, so maybe you should prohibit chatzi shir, you should marrying one sister, because it's a chatzi shir of the Isser. So he says, no, the Isser doesn't come into play until you're combining two sisters. So the whole thing less than that is nothing. It's not even at all relevant. So too, certain malachas are about combining two things, and less than that is not significant. So the question is, where does Ksiva fit into the story? Ksiva is a topic which challenges some of these theories, and there's some literature about this, because writing one letter is going to last. Writing one letter is significant. Why shouldn't that last? Some understand that you have to define Ksiva as the juxtaposition of two letters, which is interesting in itself. It could be that's because that's what they did in the Mishkan. That's how Rashi writes in one place, that they would write one letter on one part, one letter on the other part, and then they would know how to connect the two. So it's all about bringing the letters together. That's a whole discussion why that should be, but that's a part of the challenge to understand how shiurim fit into here. And the reason it's very relevant l'halacha l'maisa is because even though there's a certain shiur to become chayiv, so it's generally assumed that less than the shiur is also asur min ha-Torah. That's a whole sugya which we're not going to be able to give full time to. It's really Gemara Ayin Daled min Aleph. You'll see the Gemara, hopefully, when you go through the Gemaras. We won't have time to give full attention to the sugya. But in general, there is an Isser Chatzi Shir, which is assumed to be an Isser Min HaTorah. So the example we gave before about Kezias of Chazer, so it's Machlokas in the Gemara, but we Paskin, almost all Rishonim Paskin, that have eating any amount of Chazer is an Isser Daraisa. It's called Chatzi Shir. You're only Chayiv Malkus for a Kezias, but there's an Isser Min HaTorah to eat any amount. So, does that extend to other Isurim? Probably. Sounds very much from like Gemara that it does. And therefore, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos also, if you have a shear of how much you're allowed to, how much you're chayiv for cooking, how much you're chayiv for carrying, etc., etc., it's still Isser Min HaTorah to do even less. Now, it happens to be there are some who might disagree. Again, it's a whole sugya. The Chacham Tzvi has a famous tshuva where he says that it only applies to achila, it only applies to things, it's only about eating, it doesn't apply to other things. It's a big question from this Gemara, especially from Rashi, who very explicitly connects the sugyas. So it's a question from a lot of Rishonim. But most Rishonim probably assume Chatzi Shir is a principle in the Torah in general. So therefore, when it comes to Malachos, it's going to apply. There's going to be an Isser Daraisa regardless of how much you're doing. It's only a question of Chiyuv and Ptur. So these Achronim, it sounds like from the Magen Avos and his friends, that when it comes to these malachos, less than this is not asur at all. So does that mean asur at all or asur d'rabbanan? Maybe there's a reason to make a rabbinical prohibition, even if it's not asur mina Torah. That's a discussion. It's going to have major ramifications to say that it's not asur mina Torah to write one letter, maybe not even asur at all, which would be a big stretch. Is a big deal. The Kadosh Glover Rav has a tshuva about this, where he talks. Kadosh Glover Rav is the Talmud of the Great Hall of the Avni Nezer, where he suggests, he has a discussion, he doesn't come out with cool on this issue, but he talks about in his country, they forced people to sign up for the army. And the way you would sign up for the army, it could happen on Shabbos too, is you'd have to come and dip your finger in ink and then put your fingerprint on the document. So he's assuming that's like writing a letter, it's been roshim, it's marking something down, but it's like one letter, one finger is one letter. So is there a tzad to say that if they only make you put one fingerprint down and it's one letter, that's not asur mina Torah, it's not the same thing. So he goes through this whole discussion, the Magen Avos, does it have an impact lahalacha? Should we say that there is a difference between writing one letter and two letters in terms of whether it's a prohibition or not? He doesn't come out with cool on that for various reasons, but it's a topic that has possibly implications. So the Avnei Nezer, in one of his tshuvas, he suggests that we talk about the concept of malachas machsheves. So that means there's two things that have to come together. It has to be a malacha, and it has to be machsheves, it has to be significant. So less than a shir in general is a lack in machsheves. Which is actually interesting. The Rashbam in his commentary to Bava Basra, he says that when you say that Chatzis Shir on Shabbos is less than a full Chiyuv, he says because it's lacking in Machshavas. There's something that is fundamentally missing. While the Avnei Nezer says these malachas that are identified in Tosfos, when there's something where it doesn't fit these rules, that's a lack in malachas. It's not malacha. So other shirim are lacking machsheves, and these malachas, it's a lacking malachas if it's missing this. So these are some interesting points of introduction. Now we'll try to, we'll only have a few minutes left today, but we'll at least get our feet wet a little bit with Zriya, maybe no pun intended, and then we'll spend tomorrow continuing with Zriya, and eventually the pace will get picked up. I want to mention, in terms of the whole question about Shabbos being on the Gavra of the Chavza, so it's interesting also, particularly as we get into these malachas we're going to talk about now, it's very relevant. Rav Nissim Karelitz, his shiurim are printed in the Sefer Chut HaShani, so in the introduction, or one of the essays he has in that Sefer, so he also seems to be of the camp that Shabbos is about the individual. And he brings various rayas that there is a distinction between Shabbos in this area and Shabbos Ha'aretz. Right? That was the title of Rav Kook's Sefer about Shemitah. So Shemitah has a lot in common with Shabbos. The word malacha comes up. A lot of overlapping theories and concepts and halachos.
Every seven,
right? There's certainly major parallels between Shabbos. It's not irrelevant. There are major parallels between Shabbos and Shemitah. But he, as he points out, he thinks the lumdus is very different, that Shabbos is about the individual, while Shabbos Haaretz is about the Aretz, and he's medayik in the Rambam, that it's all about doing malacha to the land. So therefore, for example, when he talks about Zareya, which we're about to now segue into, so he notes, he uses that as illustrative of this whole point, which is part of why it's relevant specifically to our malacha here. Says Yerushalmi says, Yerushalmi lists a whole bunch of actions which it says are also part of the Zareya family. If you got to the Gemara a little bit, you saw that the Gemara already Bavli lists a few actions which it says Kulan Malacha Zareya. But the Yerushalmi has a longer list of a bunch of things which are all part of Zareya, and there it asserts the principle that anything that enhances the produce is considered to be Zareya. And including in that list, it has things like ma'ashen u'matlia, which, you know, ma'ashen is using smoke to smoke out the damaging elements of the plants, or matlia would mean to take out the insects. So there, that doesn't really make it grow better. It stops it from being damaged. So as Rav Karelitz discusses there, he says, this is true when it comes to Shabbos, it's not true when it comes to Shemitah. When it comes to Shemitah, there's also a malacha called Zareya, but the rules are different. It's not going to include things like this. And he suggests, there's two reasons. First of all, when it comes to Shemitah, we don't have toldos. We don't prohibit toldos. Anything that's considered to be a toldo of a malacha is relevant to Shabbos, not relevant to Shemitah. That's a technicality for now. But also in terms of the concept, that when it comes to Shemitah, so Shemitah is about making the land better. So if I'm just stopping things from hurting the land, so then that's not called Shemitah malacha. But on Shabbos, since it's about what I'm doing, so it's the same effort I'm doing towards protecting or enhancing the plant, so therefore the fact the plant's not going to know that I ever did anything, it's not going to change the fact that it's still Zriya as far as I'm concerned, because the Gavra is involved in these efforts towards the plant. So that's a point which again segues us into the basic malacha of Zriya. So we'll spend, I think our general schedule is 11:45 to 12:45. We'll spend the next few minutes getting started in the topic of Zriya, and we'll continue tomorrow. We'll try to get most of it done tomorrow so that we'll be on a decent pace. But again, Zriya is a bigger malacha than the others, so don't worry if the calculations don't come out. There is a little bit of a question, what malacha is really first, which the Gemara kind of gets into. Is it Zriya or Charisha? Many wonderful Sfarim that have been printed on the Lama Tes Malachos list Charisha first. We'll do Zriya first because it's the first thing listed in the Mishnah and it is the first Sugya. Even though the Gemara says it's a discussion whether Zriya should come first, maybe procedurally Charisha should come first. If you have to plow your land before you can drop the seeds in, so maybe Charisha has a good case to be made for the first Malacha. Despite that, we'll follow the order of the Mishnah. We'll start with Zriya. So we talk about this question of a shear. So what is the shear for Zriya? Is there a shear for Zriya? So there are some who assume, many who assume, such as the Prima Gadim, that this is a machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam. What does Rashi seem to say about this? Anyone see this?
Kigrogris.
Sounds like it's Kigrogris, right? Because Rashi understands that Grogris is a dried fig, that all of the things that I mentioned in the Mishnah, the same Rashi that we talked about before, where he pushes away the concept of Sidur the Pas, that all of these things are Shirin Be Kigrogris, Chutz Mi Choresh. Alright, so if you do the math, so you subtract only Choresh, so you're left with Zriya. So it sounds like Zriya is also subject to this rule of being included in Grogris, that in order to be Chayiv for planting on Shabbos, you have to plant a grogris. That's how the Prima Gadim and others read this Rashi, which seems to be supported by the words in Rashi. The Rambam clearly says differently. The Rambam says kol shehu is chayiv. Kol shehu is a little bit of a fishy word because it has some ambiguity to it. Kol shehu is often a way of saying there's no shear. Kol shehu is anything. So you could say that means there's no shear, which is what it sounds like. Or you could, if it'll make things work better, you could say that there is a shear, but it's a infinitesimal shear, that it's a shear that's so small that the shear is kol shehu. So there's some ambiguity there which may make a difference, and it's essentially whether the Rambam is saying there's no shear, or there is a shear that's so small that you're never going to be less than it, because it's the smallest possible shear we could have. But it sounds like he's arguing with Rashi about whether it's a grogris or it's this infinitesimal amount, either sub-shearal or minimal shear. So some suggest, for example, the Sefer Bikur Yitzchak, a very beautiful Sefer, has a lot of fascinating lumdus, that this goes to the question that we mentioned earlier, that what are we interested in when it comes to Shabbos? Are we interested in the malacha? Are we interested in the individual who's doing malacha? So we saw the Rambam, that the Rambam says that he changes the language of the Mishnah to focus on malachas. So he's interested in the result, that there should be a Zriya, there should be something happening. So therefore, if we're looking at what's going to be, so then we don't have to care how big the seeds are, because the seeds are going to grow into something much bigger. So all you need to have something of chashivas is any type of seed. So if we're going to look at the future product, it's not going to matter if we're going to find our chashivas from what's going to come out of this, then we don't have to worry about what's going in. A very small amount, anything at all, anything that is a seed is going to bring about a seed of, is going to bring about something that is going to be chashiv. While maybe Rashi, according to his suggestion, is more interested in what the individual is doing, and therefore he's dealing with a seed, he's not dealing with an end product, and therefore that seed has to be chashuv, so it has to be at least as much as not one seed, enough seeds to add up to a grover's. But maybe that's where this difference is happening, that Rashi is more interested in you and the Rambam is more interested in what's happened. That's all. Sorry.
Does Rashi need to plant a grogress of seeds or something that will produce a grogress?
Well, that's that seems to be the question. Produce a grogress, you're assuming that everything is going to produce much more, right? Which seems to be what the Rambam is saying, that since it's always going to produce at least a grogress, he doesn't care how much we're dealing with.
Well, it is possible to produce less than a grogress, right?
Well, I don't think anything that you're going to plant is going to, you're going to know that it's going to produce less than, once you're dealing with planting something, it's grogress is a tiny dried up fig, so it's not shaykh to really plant something that's going to grow to smaller than that. You can put in less than that, but it's going to come out to more than that. So that seems to be the focus, that maybe the Rambam is interested in what's going to come out, and Rashi is interested in what's going to go in, because he's interested in the individual. That's assuming that there really is a debate between Rashi and the Rambam on this. A lot of the later Sfarim thought that there isn't really much of a debate, and that Rashi also agrees that Kol Shehu is Chayev. So it's a question, how do you read our Rashi, where, again, mathematically, he only subtracted one. So some suggest, like the Arugas Abosim. The Arugas Abosim is the Pupa Rebbe of Greenwald. So he's a classical posek. He happens to have a lot in his sefer. He has a treatment of all Lamatas Melachos. So in that sefer, so he says that Rashi also means that there's no shir for Zriya either. But when he says Chutz Michoresh, he means everything that comes after Choresh. And since he's assuming, goes back to our question of what's number one, is Choresh number one or is Zareh number one? So if Zareh is number one, Choresh is number two, what Rashi means is everything after number two is Kegrogress. But one and two are no Shir. Others suggest that the issue is just what's explicit in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Mishnah says later, that Choresh has no shear. So Rashi was just focusing on Choresh because the Gemara identifies it as having no shear. But Zriya is interrelated with Choresh, according to this, because Zriya is the consequence of Charisha. So the reason, he's understanding the reason the Mishnah says that Charisha has no shear is because any amount of Zriya is significant. So any amount of Charisha that will prepare for any amount of Zriya is devoid of shear, and therefore they are linked together. Rav Simcha Zissel Broid, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chevron, has a sefer called Sam Derech, where he thinks that the whole point is, he also assumes that really Rashi agrees that it's a Kol Shehu, for whatever reason, technicality, in terms of why he phrases himself the way he does. And he says that there is a difference between Zriya. Oh, we'll talk. Actually, the difference is actually going to draw on something else. Maybe we'll mention something else later, and we'll come back to this point about what he thinks the difference is. But he also maintains that Rashi, then he has a whole essay to prove it, where he basically maintains that Rashi is going to agree that Zriya is a Kol Shehu. Now, there are a couple other Rashis which could prove one way or another. There's actually a lot of Rashis. I could give you a list if you want to look at it tomorrow. But, for example, later on, the Gemara talks about how much you have to carry in order to be chayev, what's considered to be significant. So, here, the beginning of Tadi Amid Beis, the beginning of Perek HaMatznia. So, the Mishnah talks about how Matznia Lezera, if you're taking out seeds in order to plant them. So how much you have to carry out in order to be chayiv? So the Mishnah says, Rosi b'Shabbos chayiv b'kol shehu, any amount. And here Rashi says, the ha'ach shuvei, because you're, by taking it out in order to plant it, you are giving it chashivas. So what exactly does that mean in terms of the shir for Zriya? So there is some room to debate back and forth. It's interesting, the assumption that what is considered a chashur for you to carry should be defined by the malacha that happens to be relevant to that object. You could quibble with that. So that's how some discuss. There's also Rashi in Krisus and Daf Yud Zayin, where Rashi talks about less than a shir by Zriya. So some say aye, so apparently he does hold there is a shir. But as Broid and others point out, that he also talks there about less than a shir by Harisha. And again, it's a fair submission, there's no shir by Harisha, so it doesn't tell us anything more about Zriya, because whatever question you could ask about that, you could ask about Harisha also. So those are some of the points relevant to Rashi's Shita and other Shitas in terms of Achiv. What is the minimal shear you have to plant in order to be chayiv, in order to be liable for the Isser of Zriya? The major, major issue, the fun topic that the Acharonim spend most time on, at least Lumdus when talking about Zriya, we'll have to talk about tomorrow, but we'll just introduce it in the minutes that we have left, and then maybe we'll just quickly chazer what we spoke about. That there is a major conceptual issue with the Malacha of Zriya. And it has to do actually with Malacha of Afiyah, of Bishul. So I said we're not going to get to that so much. Bishul, we'll get to it at least now in terms of the contrast between Rashi, between Zriya and Bishul, and if there is a contrast. And the issue is essentially as follows, that the parallel between Zriya and Bishul is that they're both malachos that don't happen immediately. If I bake something or if I cook something, so there's a time lag. I put it in the oven, and it takes, in the microwave oven, it still takes some period of time between when I put it in and when it becomes baked. So presumably, let's say even in a microwave, I put something in, if I take it out 1 second later, it's not cooked at all. So it then becomes important to define when does one violate the Isser of Afiyah. Why does it become important? Because, for example, let's say I started on Shabbos, but it only happens after Shabbos. Or maybe vice versa, though less likely. Or what happens if I interrupt in the middle? Which is a Beferish Gemara and Daf Dalet. If you haven't seen it, you can look at it tomorrow, where the Gemara seems to explicitly say when it comes to baking, if you interrupt the process in the middle, you're not going to be chayav. Because the Gemara has a whole discussion there that there's an issur d'rabbanan to take bread out of the oven on Shabbos. So the Gemara raises the question, how insistent are we going to be on that issur d'rabbanan? Let's say you put bread in the oven on Shabbos, and then you realize, holy cow, that's a malacha, you're going to be chayav skila, that's really bad. So, do we allow you to violate the Sista Rabbanan to cancel the Malacha? Apparently suggesting that if I were to take the bread out of the oven, that I would not be Chayiv Skila for baking. So it's not just putting it in and I'm done. If I take it out, I'm going to interrupt the Malacha and stop it from happening. And the Gemara's only question is, are you allowed to do that? But apparently it works. So based on that, the Acharonim asks, we have a major question when it comes to Zriya. Because Zriya, there's also a time lag when it comes to the Malacha. Because presumably, if I take seeds and I put them in a soda can, where nothing's going to happen to them, where it's not going to take root, it's not going to grow, that's not a Malacha of Zriya. It's not just putting seeds into something that's Zriya. Presumably, it's putting it into a context where it's going to grow, where it's going to sprout. So it's clear from other Gemaras and Shas that it takes time for that to happen. And, you know, the actual Metzias aside, let's deal with halachic terminology, the Gemara assumes, let's say, it takes at least 3 days for that to happen. So essentially, it is impossible for that to happen on Shabbos if you plant it on Shabbos. So how do we deal with that? How could there be a Malacha of Zriya if it can't be finished on Shabbos? And presumably, not necessarily true la halacha, but if we assume there is a comparison between baking and planting, so if the Gemara says that if I take the bread out of the oven, I'm not going to be chayiv, so then maybe we should say if I take the seeds out of the ground before it takes root, I'm not going to be chayiv. So how does this work? If I plant the seeds on Shabbos, it's not going to take root until Tuesday. And maybe I'm going to come on Sunday and take the seeds out. So how is there a malacha called Zriya? How do you violate this malacha? So this is a major topic which a lot of Achronim got involved in. The most famous voices representing two different sides of the issue, which we'll talk about tomorrow, is on the one hand the Menchas Chinuch, both in Shabbos, in the Musach HaShabbos, and in Reish Tzadiches, and the Rosh Hash, which I think is where Yitzchak is looking now. Right, so if you look, certainly tomorrow morning, you should take a look at the Rosh Hash on the Mishnah. Over here, on $9, the Rosh Hash raises this question, how do you have a malacha called Zariah?
What do you do with a problem called Zariah? Why are we making a jump that the Shear has something to do with the production of the malacha?
He's not. So this is separate from this. We'll see if there's any link between the two, but this is separate from the question of Shear. Whatever the Shear is, but if...
You could say the Shear is something. It doesn't matter if it takes root or not.
But if it doesn't take root, then why is that called Zariah? If I put something in the ground, between day one and day three, what's the difference between a seed in the ground and a seed in a Diet Pepsi can? Neither of them are connecting, growing, doing anything. So if I assume there's no malach of Zariah putting a seed into a non-fertile context, so then what's the difference until it takes root? What makes it significant? So there is a very major machlokus on this point between the Rosh Hash and the Menchas Chinuch and other views in between. Has major implications la halacha. So God willing, tomorrow we'll look at the various angles of that question, and then we'll also try to cover some of the other loose ends in Zariah. We'll see if we finish it tomorrow or Wednesday, but we'll try to make some major progress in that. So let's just quickly review what we spoke about today. Spoke about the fact that 39 malachos, God created the world, 7 days, whole story. 39 malachos, the Torah doesn't spell out what exactly they are. The Gemara assumes they're derived from the Mishkan. The number 39 comes from the usage of the word malacha. And there is some debate whether the Mishkan means the making of the Mishkan or that which happened in the Mishkan. A debate at least between Rashi and Rabbeinu Hanan also and Rav Haigon. Maybe a machlokas bavli and Rishalmi, and that affects the whole question of what is siddur of the past. His first 11 malachas, are they about making the lachem hapanim, which is something that happened in the Mishkan? That was Rav Haigon's view, or do we take Rashi's view that it's about constructing the Mishkan, where therefore it's for the making of the samamanim, and has got nothing to do with past, and the whole past thing is pasnished? Or do we, and then we brought up the question that can we be medayik in the Mishnah that the language of Zariah versus Hazariah, the Rambam saying Zariah and the Mishnah saying Hazariah, is there any significance to that? The Magen Mishnah raised the question. We mentioned the Magen Avos's approach that when it comes to the Mishnah, maybe the Mishnah is assuming Malacha Shenashiyah for the Gufa is Pater, so therefore it's only interested in a Zoreya who wants to be Zoreya, while the Rambam assumes that a Malacha Shenashiyah for the Gufa is Chayiv, so therefore we're more interested in what the Malacha is itself rather than your intent. And therefore, Zariah is his interest. We mentioned that there were a lot of Achronim who understood that it shows you that the individual is all we care about on Shabbos, not the action. It is Hazariah rather than an action of Zariah, which could have implications for Shlichus, why it is that Amir al-Akam is presumably only an Issa d'Rabbanan, could have implications for Refuah on Shabbos, if we assume there's no Issa on the Gavra, maybe there's no Issa at all. And then we looked at how that was really a whole discussion, that Rav Zevin has the opposite view in his essay in L'Or HaHalacha, and that the question of Amir al-Akum could prove either position. If you want, how do you factor in the Rabbanans? The fact that Maisa Shabbos is an Issa d'Rabbanan could also prove either position. And then I mentioned Rav Zevin's explanation of the view of the Rashba, that someone who's accepted Shabbos can ask somebody else to do Malacha for him on Shabbos, doesn't necessarily have to challenge this the way he explains it. Then we mentioned that when it comes to Shvius, very relevant to our Malachas here, that as Rav Nissim Karelis points out, Shvius is probably a different lumdus, that Shvius is about the karka, while Shabbos is about the individual, and that's why Zariah, for example, is going to have a different Hagdara, that on Shabbos it's anything that helps or stops hurting the plant, while in Shvius it's only going to be about the actual consequences to the land, and we're not interested in taking away bugs and things like that. And then we talked about the Tosus' question about why it is the Mishnah explains some Shirim and not others, and the suggestion that the Magen Avos eventually supplied that other Achronim agreed with, that a Shir for all the other Malachas is about Chashivas, but when it comes to these Malachas it's definitional, less than this is not the Malach at all, and it's presumably Mutter or Mutter Manatar, a whole discussion in practicality what that means. We saw different versions of what this theory means, either that less than this it's not going to last, or less than this it's not called the action at all. We mentioned the Avinez's approach, that we need malachas machshavas. Machshavas means we need a shir, it has to be chashav, and malachas means it has to be the action, it has to be malacha. Less than that, it's not going to be the malacha at all, and all of that impacts the whole question of shir, that we're it's going to affect all of the malachas. And then we talked about the question of, is there a shir for Zriya or not? We're treating as the first of the malachos. Sounds like from Rashi that it's kagrogeris, that all of Siddur Dapas, except for Choresh, is kagrogeris. The Rambam says it's kol shehu, which he said could either mean there's no shir or there is a very, very minimal infinitesimal shir. And we mentioned one suggestion that this all flows out of the whole Chatzagavra question, that the Rambam is interested in what's going to happen, so he's looking at the future plant that's going to grow, while Rashi is interested in the individual, so he's looking at what you are planting. But then we mentioned that a lot of Achronim don't even agree that Rashi thinks that there is a Shir for Zriya, and they have various explanations how his words are consistent with the theory that he agrees Zriya is also the Kol Shehu. And then we basically just introduced this question of what exactly the Malacha of Zriya is in light of the time lag, which will not allow the entire action to happen on Shabbos, and that, Be'ez Hashem, we will pick up with tomorrow morning. So in terms of this extra Marcomas, maybe I could give you more to look at, but just in terms of things you have in your Gemara, if you fat sugya tomorrow, you could look at the Gemara on Daf Dalet about somebody who has bread in the oven, is he allowed to take it out? And the Rosh Hashanah our Mishnah, which is going to talk about the contrast between the two, will take a position that others vehemently disagreed with, and Be'ez Hashem will go into more detail about that tomorrow. Okay, Yashar Koach. Thank you very much.
Well, schedule-wise...